UK Wine Show, show number 656. Food and Wine Matching, the WSET approach. Hello and welcome to the UK Wine Show. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show, we're going to take a little bit of a deep dive into food and wine matching. We're going to look at how food and wine matching is done according to WSET, or approach that they take anyway. The idea behind this show is we'll actually use it as part of our WST Level 3 podcast, which we've got, and you guys get to find out all about food and wine matching from it. Hope you guys have had a very good week. I have been reasonably steady busy. I've had a pretty big week getting together the first tranche of our WST Level 4 Diploma Wines of the World, that's known as D3 in the diploma speak, flashcards. We've uploaded about 1,000 cards so far. Still lots of work to be done. I think it's going to be about a 3,000 card set when I'm all finished. But we've priced them to reflect the number of cards at £10. Over time, we'll add more cards to it and the price will go up. Training's been pretty steady, a bit tired from the swimming. It's taken a bit of time getting used to it. The volume of training's slowly going up. I went from about 4 hours a month ago to about 6 or 7 now. So getting there. Still a fair way to get up to my normal sort of 9 to 10 hours a week of training when I'm giving it heaps. But we'll get there. And also still carrying about 8 kilo over due to my COVID relaxation approach to life. Anyway, that's all my news. Let's get into the wine news with Jane.
Cheers, Chris. Well, first up this week, from 2023, appellations in Europe's finest wine regions will have the option to create low and no alcohol wines. Historically, very low and non-alcoholic wines in general have been banned in the EU. EU wine regions fall into a number of zones, and the minimum alcohol allowed depends upon the zone the vineyard is in. The lowest alcohol level permitted is for Zone A, which covers most of Germany, where the ABV must be 5% as a minimum. Below this level, and it was not considered to be wine. But from the 1st of January 2023, table wines, that's wines with no geographical identification, will be allowed to be produced that goes below 0.5% ABV, while IGP and PDO wines will be able to range between 8.5% alcohol to 0.5%. These drinks will now be allowed to be called wine, and a new de-alcoholised wine category can be introduced. Each regional body will have to decide how and if they wish to introduce these low and de-alcoholised wines to their regulations.
Wines with very low alcohol levels were never allowed to be called wine in the EU. And that's why, for example, you have seen American brand Echo Falls, they've got a wine called Summer Berries. It doesn't mention the word wine on the bottle, it's not legally allowed to be called wine. Now, alcohol gives body to a wine, it gives mouth feel. And usually no or low alcohol wines simply use sugar to give that body and mouthfeel. But if you recall, we spoke to beer expert Janine Dunseith. She was from The Real Ale. They've recently renamed themselves to Real Drinks. She said many beer producers add loads of other ingredients to give mouthfeel. Wine typically can't have other things added to it, which is why the 19 Crimes flavoured coffee wine doesn't actually say wine on the label. It says it's a red blend, the idea being that if you add lots of things like coffee or other flavours to the wine, you've got to be very careful to stay within the rules. Removing alcohol is just one part of the problem that the EU is managing. Mouthfeel is another. Without other changes to allow chemicals to give mouthfeel, like the beer industry, the best low-alcohol wines will still not be called wine. What's the next story, Jane?
Next up, the Taylor's Port Golden Vines Diversity Scholarships applications have closed with 42 candidates. The 42 candidates were limited to BAME and BIPOC applicants, with the results of the final two selected to be announced on the 28th of May. The two scholarships are worth £55,000 each and will be awarded to candidates studying the Master of Wine or Master Sommelier course.
Cheers, Jane. Good luck to the candidates. What's the last story?
Finally this week, the New Zealand 2021 harvest has been severely hit by a hard frost. And so, with strong sales over the COVID period, shortages are likely. Philip Gregan, the CEO of New Zealand Wine Growers, said we're already seeing supply and demand tension as a result, and we expect that many wineries will face tough decisions on who they can supply in their key markets over the next year. The quantity is going to be small, but the quality will be high. He said all reports indicate the quality of the harvest so far is exceptional, and we're looking forward to some fantastic wines coming out of this year's vintage. Meanwhile, in France, the recent frost has cost an estimated loss of as much as 2 billion euros. That's according to France's largest agricultural union, the Fédération Nationale des Syndicats d'Exploitants Agricoles, or the FNSEA. The frosts on the 7th and 8th of April 2021 affected producers from the Champagne region down to the Languedoc. That's all in the news this week. Don't forget to go to our website at 3050.co.uk to check out these stories. And you can follow us on Twitter at 3051.
Cheers, Jane. While there's no clear correlation between frost and quality, sometimes if frost occurs just at the right time, it can result in an improved quality. But timing is essential. Let's have a little recap on frost. Frost is usually a problem in cool continental climates, which are usually pretty well prepared for this unwanted visitor. Coastal areas moderated by warm seas or vineyards situated near large rivers often escape the frost. But even in New Zealand, which has a maritime climate, sinking air off mountain ranges can create a real problem. The problem with frost is that they are most likely as the weather's changing from the cold winter to the warm summer. The worst time for frost to occur is usually after a warm spell, which causes the vines to bud burst. They think summer is on the way, so here we go. And these very tender buds get exposed to the air, and if a frost comes along, it can burn off those buds, dramatically reducing yield. Okay, next up, we're going to do our interview. Well, it's not really an interview. It's about me having a chat to you about wine and food matching. I've spent quite a number of years looking at wine and food matching. It was one of those things early on in my wine career I really didn't understand, and I invested a lot of time. In fact, I used the same base materials a guy called Tim Hannay that WCT did when they rewrote their wine and food matching components for the WCT Level 2 course and the Level 3 course. I actually came up with pretty much the same answers as they did using the same resource materials, but the way I explain it is usually, I think, a little bit better because it starts with some general principles and drives down to use food as an example. But the same principles can be used to talk about why wines improve and how they improve when you decant them or how they change when the wine's aging. So the way I explain it, I think, is both simpler and also is a much more wider applicable approach to wine. So as we go through the wine and food matching components here, we're going to talk about it from WSET's point of view. There are alternatives and other things to think about when you're talking about wine and food matching, but I'm going to stick to the main components of the wine and food matching. So before we start, the first thing we need to realize is when it comes to wine and food matching, we all like different things. Anybody who tells you, oh, this is a great combination, what they're saying is, I like this combination. It doesn't mean you're going to like it. What drives your preferences is twofold. First of all, it's your cultural and personal upbringing. We call it the nurture, if you like. And then you've got your nature, your genetics, which determines in particular, how sensitive you are to things like bitterness. So it's a nature-nurture type of thing. Now, there's lots of different ways of doing food and wine matching. The way WSD approach it, and I agree with them, I think it's a very good way, is to just explain how food interacts with the wine, how the wine interacts with the food, and not get dragged into whether it's a good combination or a bad combination, and let you make the decision about that. I'll give you an example. There's two philosophical approaches to wine. One of them, which I often call the French approach, is all about harmony and balance. So if you're given a hot, spicy dish, you probably want a wine that'll balance it out. So quite often you'll go for a lower alcohol, sweeter style of wine where the sugar masks a little bit of the burning effect from the food. That's fine. That's an approach to it. That, as I said, the type of wine you might have there if you're looking for balance or harmony is lower alcohols and higher sugar content. Now, some people might contend that the reason they ordered a hot, spicy food at a restaurant is because they like hot, spicy food and they're not looking to have the food tamed by some wine. In fact, if anything, they want to big the hot spiciness up. In which case, you probably find that a person will have higher alcohols and possibly a wine with quite strong tannins, and that'll bring up the fieriness in the food and make it even more spicy. So depending on what you want, completely different wines can be very good food and wine matching. So that's the starting premise. So let's look at what's going on. And the way I think about it, it's slightly different to WST, but everything WST says fits within this. And I think it's just a better model for food and wine matching, is to start off with this concept of what we call balance. Now, a lot of people know about balance. They think about, you know, sweetness hides acidity, acidity hides sweetness. You know, in the early days of English wine production, the acidity was rapier high. So England made a lot of sort of medium sweet or off dry styles of wine to hide the acidity in the wines. Some people might have heard of that sweetness hides bitterness as well. So sweetness will hide tannins. Tannins will hide sweetness. If you get a tannic red wine, put a half teaspoon of sugar in it, it'll make the tannins vanish on you. So tannins can hide sugar. Sugar hides tannins in the wines. Well, you can take that sort of idea and just bring it out into a much more complete understanding of balance. I always say there's the nice bits and the nasty bits. All the nice bits are the things that people quite often like. It's things like body in the wine. It's like fruit in the wine. And it's sweetness. So all the nice things are body, fruit, and sweetness. On the other side of the balance seesaw, if you like, is all the nasty stuff. And that is things like tannins and acidity and the burning effect from alcohol. What you'll find is if one side of the equation goes up, let's say we've got a wine and we add a lot of sugar into the wine, effectively we've made the wine sweeter, which is brings up the body. Sugar gives body to a wine, so it makes the body more. And also it tends to highlight the fruitiness of the wine. And similarly, on the other side, if you add sugar to the wine, you hide the acidity, you tend to suppress the tannins, and you also, sugar tends to hide the burning effect of alcohol. You know, if you think about Thai food, they often have a bit of heat there, but they also put a little bit of sugar in their food quite often. That's to take the edge off the heat. So moving one side of the seesaw tends to bring all of that side up and suppresses all the other side, and vice versa. So when we're thinking about what's a good combination, what's a bad combination, etc., what we want to do is think about what pushes up the nice side, the sweetness, the fruit, the body. So before we get into that, one thing you want to be aware of is sometimes if you're eating something that's similar, you'll get desensitized to it. So if I'm eating something sweet and I drink something that's sweet, I'm getting desensitized to the sugar from the food I'm eating. So when I drink something that's sweet, the wine won't taste as sweet. With food, there's two interactions. Either it'll desensitize you to it, so you won't notice it, or sometimes it enhances it. So hot food with a high alcohol wine will make the hot food taste even higher. So we're really dealing with desensitizing it or enhancing something. That's really what's going on. And then it's about how that affects the balance. So let's start off with the nice stuff. The nice stuff are things that make the wine taste more fruity, more body, sweeter. And that, the big one, is acidity. If you eat something that's high in acidity, like a salad with a vinaigrette dressing or something like that, you'll desensitize yourself to acidity, which means when you taste a wine, the acidity levels appear lower. It'll drag down your perception of tannins and the burning effect of alcohol, but it'll also big up the sweetness, which will give you more body in the wine and bring up the fruitiness. So acidity makes wines more nice. The other big one that really helps wines is salt, particularly for red wines, because salt stops you tasting bitterness. So if you're eating something with a lot of salt in it, what tends to happen is you suppress the tannins in the wine, which suppresses the acidity and the burning effect of alcohol, and it bigs up the fruit, the body, and the sweetness in the wine. So salt, again, is very generous to wine. So sweet and salt are both good for wine, particularly salt in red wines. Let's talk about the things that are pretty hard on wine. Well, the big one is sweet. Sugar desensitizes you to sugar in the wine, which pulls down your nice side. So you lose sugar, you lose body, you lose fruitiness in the wine. It makes the wine taste a little bit more acidic, maybe more tannic as well. So sugar is a really tough thing to have with wines, particularly if you're trying to have it with a sweet tannic wine. That's really tough. Now, it's not to say that that's not a great combination for you if you really love bitterness, but it bigs up the harder stuff, the things that most people don't enjoy. Umami is another ingredient. Now, umami, people often say, what is umami? Well, it's a glutamate. Glutamates are found in cooked mushrooms, they're found in tomatoes, they're found in a lot of biological processes as well. Umami. And umami tends to make wines more tannic. So what you'll find is it bigs up the tannins, which drags up your acidity and burning effect of alcohol, suppressing the fruit, suppressing the body, and suppressing the sweetness in the wine. So umami is a pretty tough thing on wines. Now, quite often, you'll find umami and salt go really well together. Umami and salt are a great combination. I love tomatoes on toast with some salt on top. That's a brilliant combination. And salt suppresses your ability to taste bitterness as well. So you'll quite often see umami and salt in food, and hopefully the salt is helping to counteract some of the umami, particularly for tannic red wines. And in fact, the most common sort of additive for cooking using glutamate is monosodium glutamate, or MSG. That's glutamates with salt there. And that can be quite nice, I must admit, in foods. The other things you've got to watch out for, heat, chilies, spicy foods, that type of thing. Heat will enhance heat. So you'll land up pushing up the negative side, suppressing the nice side. So heat tends to build on heat. You eat something hot and then you eat something hot again, they just add to each other. Bitterness is another one. If you eat Brussels sprouts or something like that, bitterness will enhance bitterness or tannins in the wine, bringing up your acidity, your burning effect of alcohol, suppressing all the nice stuff, the fruit, the body, the sweetness in the wine. So the way I like my students to think about it is you've got the nice stuff, salt and sugar, and that just twists the seesaw up on the nice side. And then you've got the nasty stuff, the acidity, umami, hot food, and bitter food. They will all push up the nasty side, suppressing the nice stuff. So really, if you can just remember the seesaw and what is nice and what's nasty, it's really easy to remember how the wine changes because it just moves the seesaw a particular way. There are some other things that you will find in wines. Fat is something that some people often find in a lot of food. And fat and acidity work really well together. Acidity tends to cut through the fat. Fat can leave your mouth feeling a little bit cloy, a little bit heavy. And acidity cuts through that quite nicely. So acidic wines with fatty food is really, really good. Another little combination which can be quite nice is sweet and salt. So we've already said that salt suppresses the bitterness. Well, quite often people like salt and sweetness. Think about salted caramel. A lot of people like that. That seems to be a combination people really like. So sweet, and as I said, salt is one of the positives in wine. So salt can be quite nice, even with sweet wines. The only other thing that doesn't really work from that balance equation is the concept of intensity. Sometimes foods are really super intensive, heaps of flavor in there. You want to drink a wine that can hold up to it. If you want to be able to taste the wine anyway, then you normally have a big, bold wine to hold up against big, bold flavors. Similarly, if the flavors are quite subtle and very delicate, you'll tend to want to have a wine that's quite subtle and delicate. Otherwise, you'll get these big, bold flavours in the wine that will flood any delicate food, and you won't really taste the food. You'll just get this massive flavour of wine. So people often balance out the intensity of flavour between the wine and the food, making sure they're in balance. Okay, that ends pretty much the look at food and wine matching, and it's pretty much the way the WST look at it, but I've put my little spin on it by expanding it out and talking about how the balance of wine is changed more than anything else, and giving you a more comprehensive balance equation, if you like. I think that's a great way of thinking about it. That pretty much ends the show this week. The only thing to finish up with is our quote, and this week's quote, as last week and the next few weeks, is a song. So see if you know who the singer is or the song, etc. Here we go. I'm not going to sing it. As you guys know, I cannot sing to save my life. I come from a very musical family, and I miss that gene somehow. Anyway, here we go. I saw her standing today at the reception, a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she had to meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. And that song is... You can always get what you want, by the Rolling Stones. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.